Hello, America. Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Welcome. Glad you could join us. Please share these productions far and wide because we need to get all hands on deck. We need to make people aware. We need to motivate people to action. We're running out of time, and this particular broadcast is going to really accentuate that. Our guest today is going to be Jonathan Hollerman, and he is the deputy director for grid down scenario, grid down reporting to Congress, Homeland Security. He is the guy, and we're bringing him on and we're going to quiz him. And this is something I know a lot about. I got involved with grid down EMP, probably 2010, 2011. Obama committed absolute treason during the grid X drills, which was a simulated takedown of our grid, when he let the Chinese and the Russians sit in so they could see how to do it and gave them all the shortcuts. Are you surprised? Well, you shouldn't be. And Jonathan's going to come on and talk about this. Now, you're going to be disappointed at the end, I would imagine. He and I have already kind of nailed out what we're going to talk about, but we can't talk about everything in one show, and he's graciously agreed already in advance. He's going to come back and talk about more. And this is something that we really need to pay special attention to. Also, if you have not heard, last night on YouTube, I presented inside intel that was given to me by Doug Thornton, and then I was able to turn around and confirm about 20% of it with a couple of sources of mine. And let's just put it this way. You're going to want to go check that out. It's a live stream. We are clearly going to war, and Russia, China, Iran, United States all have done their final preparations. And that's, if you listen to what I read and how I cover this, I think you'll see very quickly. Also, too, there's something you're going to want to pay attention to that we're going to actually cover sometime in this 24-hour news cycle. And that's the fact that, in fact, Dr. Anna Mihachik, she came on my show and we talked about time dilation. And we got into physics and other things. And mostly we were talking about the vaccine and the dangers it poses. But then we got into time dilation, making time move and stand still. And I'm gonna give a presentation in that 24-hour period about physics, quantum physics. It's something I know quite a bit about. It's one of my hobbies, been my hobby for about 25 years. And we're going to go through and you're going to like scratch your head and say, holy crap. And basically what I'm going to be telling you is the fact that the Satanist globalists are trying to avoid Judgment Day by manipulating the time-space continuum. And we're going to walk you through the physics. I mean, we're not just going to say, hey, we think this is happening. And Dr. Anna and I talked about this a little bit, but I'm really going to expand on this. So there's a lot of big stuff coming up here on The Common Sense Show. I want to remind you that you need to be out of the system as much as you can. You need food, water, guns, gold, ammo, natural medicine, and tools, and we can help you with the gold. And I'm recommending you get gold coins to replace your bank account. Oh, you should leave operating capital in for a couple of months, but that's it. And if you're able to get outside the system and take your retirement out, back it with gold, you control it, you own it, then the Dodd-Frank law won't kick in and they can't take your retirement from you, they can't take your bank account from you, because Noble Gold will teach you how to get around this. It's absolutely a fantastic deal. I just closed a deal on Friday, and I'm arranging for delivery, and I'll be honest with you, I'm doing silver coins. And they ain't going to be at the house. You better hide it. I'm telling you, they're going to outlaw anything but CBDC down the road. So you're going to really want to be prepared for this. Now, I can send you a free information packet that tells you how Noble Gold does all this. All you have to do is go to DaveHodgesGold.com. That's DaveHodgesGold.com. And what you're going to get is something that is just absolutely remarkable. Easy to deal with. They will not push you. They're the lowest keyed people I've ever dealt with, but they're the best I've ever dealt with. And I'm diversified, and I sleep good at night knowing that I'm pretty well protected. I don't think we can be 100% protected, but I think I'm largely out of harm's way, and I want you to be the same way. So go to DaveHodgesGold.com, or if you feel a sense of urgency, certainly you should call them. 877-646-5347. 877-646-5347. And they'll give you a 5-ounce bullion silver America the Beautiful coin, just as a way of saying thank you for all qualifying retirements. Listen, we're running out of time. I can't stress to you, food, water, guns, gold, ammo, natural medicine, and tools. Now back to Noble Gold real quickly. The government wants me to give you a warning. I agree with the warning. Nothing's guaranteed, and past performance is not indicative of future performance, but I'll say this, okay? It's really true about the banks, and you get no warning there, or FTX, you got no warning there. So anyway, let's take care of that together. Hey, I'm warning you, this is one heck of an interview with Jonathan Hollerman. And I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, you are going to be shocked. Stay tuned. Here's Jonathan. Hey, thanks for staying with us through the intro. And we are in our guest segment here of the Common Sense Show, where we're freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And of course, with your help. And we have Jonathan Hollerman with us. And this is going to be a topic near and dear to my heart. And you've heard my broadcast partner, Doug Thornton, many times say in the last 2 years, his biggest concern right now for America is grid down. And I share that feeling. And I went through my history with former Congressman Trent Franks, who did a wonderful job exposing this to the deaf ears of the Obama administration and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, who would not react to his concerns, which ended up being very valid and proven. So we're going to really put this out here front and center. And I will tell you, some of this you might find to be very disturbing, but that's kind of part and parcel for the times we're living in right now. So I think the more you know, the better decisions you can make for your life. And in that spirit, we're going to give you the straight, honest truth so you can make the best decisions. Jonathan is Deputy Director of the U.S. Task Force on National and Homeland Security. And this is what he performs every day, is about this situation with grid down. And we're going to explore the consequences here. And we'll also, before we leave, talk about my concern when we did the grid X drills during the Obama administration, how he purposely let in the Chinese and the Russians to observe. And if you recall, and you followed me for a long time, you know I had a fit about that, as did my congressman. And so we're going to talk about Chinese transformers and why we should be concerned, but with this president, why we're not surprised. Jonathan, welcome to the show. First time appearance here. Really glad to have you. And my thanks to my friend and colleague, Sarah Westall, for referring you to me. I listened to some of your interview with Sarah. It was, shall we say, eye-opening and dramatic. So just give the audience just a little bit of a feel for your background, what you've done to kind of set up where we're going.
Sure. Thanks for having me on, Dave. So you've already mentioned I'm the Deputy Director at the U.S. Task Force on National and Homeland Security. So that is a congressional advisory board that advises Congress on grid security matters. And our mission is to educate the government and the American people on the various threats to grid down, threats that face our country, and as well as provide solutions to prevent it. On top of that, I'm also the CEO and president of Grid Down Consulting. I'm a former United States Air Force SEER instructor. SEER stands for Survival, Evasion, Resistance, Escape. I sit on the board of directors at Impact America, and I'm also a participating member of the Electromagnetic Defense Task Force, which I'm sure we'll probably get into at some point. That was a three-day war gaming event down at LeMay War Gaming Institute, Maxwell Air Force Base, where it was a joint services effort. All the military was there, all your alphabet agencies were there, and we basically war gamed a grid down event. And that was a very eye-opening experience for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'd like to ask you just a general question, something that comes up a lot on my show when I talk about this. Do you think it's more likely we're going to see a cyber attack to take the grid down, or will it be a devastating EMP attack?
Sure. So there's four different threats that face our grid. The first one, and I'll do them from worst case scenario to the least case scenario. Worst case scenario is a nuclear EMP, which is a nuclear weapon or super EMP that's detonated about 300 kilometers above the Earth's crust here where we live. And you wouldn't know anything happened, but it would destroy most electronics in this country. And most importantly, take down the electric grid. Second would be a massive solar flare or CME. Mm-hmm. And those are, we're probably about 75 years past due for another big one to hit Earth. And that would also take down American electric grid, similar to the last big one we had was in 1859 called the Carrington event.
Right.
Third on that list would be cyber threat. We know Russia and China have infiltrated our critical infrastructure, including the electric grid. They have not activated those resources because mutually assured destruction at this point, because we're not at war with them and our country buys all their stuff. So they're not trying to destroy the global economy. As long as we're buying their stuff, they're going to be perfectly happy to keep our lights on and our Amazon and eBay systems running. So in the case of a war, that has a different, those things can change, right? And then the last would be a physical attack against the electric grid, similar to the Metcalf substation attack here. Yeah. About 7 or 8 years ago. And I know you covered that as well. Our security for our electric grid in general is self-regulated security by the electric utilities. There's no federal oversight. So that's a very real risk. If you're asking what's most likely, all four are likely at some point in time. And I would say in our lifetime, so one of these four is going to probably happen. You asked me what's more likely, cyber or EMP. It just depends on the nature of war. That's the future of warfare. And that's one of the things a lot of Americans don't really understand. They're kind of seeing it now in Ukraine. They're kind of seeing it in these recent wars where future technology is being used to fight on the battlefield. General Quast mentioned that the World War III is going to be fought in the electromagnetic spectrum. It's going to be fought in cyberspace. It's going to be fought with electronic warfare more so than it's going to be fought with soldiers. America is still trying to build the fastest plane, the biggest aircraft carrier, the most secret submarine. And those are all, that's all good and well, but many of our enemies are really focusing on future technology. They're taking steps into AI weaponry and different things like super EMP weapon technology that we're, as far as we know, we're not putting as much money into that side of the warfare. So it just depends on how the war kicks off. I believe a cyber attack will come before an EMP attack. But as Dr. Peter Pry, the patriarch of our foundation here of our organization, once stated, it's probably going to be both at the same time. They'll probably lead with a cyber attack followed up by EMP.
Interesting question, because I was going to ask you which one that you thought was more likely. But do you think the EMP attack, I understand it can be localized too, that there are weapons that can bring down planes on aircraft, our aircraft down on takeoff. I'm aware of an incident that happened, 9-10 years ago at the Arizona border near Douglas, Arizona. And I had that information from people from Luke Air Force Base that were willing to talk to me about it off the record. And they believed it was a portable, and you just aim it and fire it. It has an EMP effect on a general area, and you can project it to a certain altitude. And I believe it was developed in North Korea, but I think the Chinese had the hand in it. So I know about the partial. Do you think they'll do partial EMP attacks, or do you think at one point in time it'll be general? And I'll tell you why I'd be surprised if you say general, because the Chinese want to occupy this country for its resources. Wouldn't that be counterproductive?
Okay, so there's about three questions in there. First, directed energy weapons. So it depends on the situation. If we're talking about terrorist organization, if we're talking about a nation state. So nation states may use directed energy weapons. They can take down buildings. They can take down, like you said, planes, aircraft carriers. However, you have to be kind of at location. There's there's evidence left behind. Let's put that out there. So if a nation state used a weapon like that through the aftermath, we would probably discover exactly who did it. That's the great thing about, that's the scary thing about a nuclear EMP. A lot of people think that the only way to launch a nuclear EMP is intercontinental ballistic missiles. We're going to see it coming from around, you know, over the North Pole. We're going to have 3 or 4 minutes to respond. That's not likely how it's going to happen. Iran has tested EMP delivery devices called K-Club missile launcher. You can, you know, YouTube that and find out what that's all about. But they've launched EMP test rockets off of a cargo container. This could be launched through a submarine. This could be launched from an atmospheric balloon in this country. So there are multiple ways to set off an EMP. And so you're asking about Russia or China taking over after a yes, but I think that's a long play. This is my personal opinion. The problem with EMP is the fact that it does take a bit of time. The Congressional EMP Commission has warned Congress that within 1 year of an EMP or a nationwide grid down event, we would lose 90% of our population through starvation, disease, and societal collapse. No phones, no TV, no internet, no radios, no banking. And the big ones, no interstate trucking, no food, nothing. Everything stops where it's at. And I've been part of the wargaming operation on this. I can tell you there is no government plan on this. There is no FEMA plan. There is no military plan. There is absolutely zero plans to deal with the aftermath of a national collapse like this. So what it's just going to be everything's going to basically fall apart really fast, and it's going to get very deadly. The Chinese aren't going to want to step into the middle of that mess, I don't believe. I mean, I forget, there's more guns than people in the United States. And I think after what Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, you know, there was discussion about coming, you know, trying to occupy part of the mainland. And I think I'm butchering this, but I think the general made a comment, there'd be a gun behind every tree. You know what I mean? Right. So we're not ripe for the picking. And I know for, you know, many, many centuries, even millennia, war has been over natural resources in our global economy. I'm less convinced. Yeah, I'm not 100% convinced there is gold in Fort Knox. If there is gold in Fort Knox, I believe that, you know, you could see battalions, you know, come in by helicopter, clean that out. So they can come and pilfer our resources, you know, a month into this event or a couple of weeks into this event, and not have to occupy the landmass of Americans that, you know, Texans, and, you know, we're not going to sit well to blue hats or Chinese military forces marching into our country. So this is my personal opinion. I'm probably on the outset of this. I don't really foresee as much of a invasion in the sense of a taking over this country. I think the EMP weapon and the grid warfare is a way to win a war without firing a single bullet. So again, if we look at the war doctrine from Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, basically any nuclear country at this point, first strike doctrine is EMP, is cyber and EMP. If you can take down a country's electric grid, they have their military can't respond. They're completely blind. They have no ability to respond or fight a war. So that is the future of warfare. If your listeners get nothing else, that is what World War III will look like. Will be one of the first steps is taking down each other's electric grid and watching the people starve and the militaries are in chaos. And again, I'd be happy to discuss more kind of sitting in the EDTF and some of the military response, you know, suggestions and things that we talked about.
When you talk EDTF, what do you mean by that? What does that stand for?
It's called the Electromagnetic Defense Task Force. So It was a wargaming operation headed up by General Quast here a couple of years ago. And like I said, it was joint services. It was all your alphabet agencies. There were electric utility executives, and there were experts in other fields that were brought in. And it was a 3-day wargaming event on a national grid down event. And what would be the response? The Nuclear Regulatory Commission was there. We can discuss that. DOE, you know, it was very eye opening because I assumed somewhere someone had a plan, right? There was some kind of plan, even a minimal plan. But as of right now, the United States military bases get 99% of their electricity from the civilian electric grid. They've warned Congress that if the national electric grid was taken down, they would not be able to respond. They've only got 24 to 48 hours of backup diesel generation on their bases. Their food infrastructure on their bases comes on the base. Their food resupply, just like everywhere else in this country, trucks come on their base once or twice a week and deliver food. They're going to run out of food within a week, maybe two at the most. So they're in the same boat as everybody else. And they've warned Congress that if they lose the electric grid, or electricity through the civilian electric grid, they have no ability to respond. So these Hollywood movies you see where there's, you know, box trucks rolling down, passing out MREs, that's never going to happen. There's no backup plans for communications in the case of an EMP. The base commander can't pick up the phone line, which runs through the civilian phone channels. No sat phones work because low orbit satellites fall out of the sky. No base commander has a file cabinet where he can pull and reach a file and say, oh, this is how I'm supposed to respond to this. It's going to be kind of every man for themselves as far as the military and the government goes. So it's kind of one of those situations where, like I said, a foreign enemy can completely destroy our country without firing a single bullet.
It's interesting. I would almost suspect that on a base where they could maintain some presence for 48 hours and have food for a week, they might plunder the civilian population. Have you given that any consideration?
I have. I'm not saying of all the military bases and all the reserve bases across this country that that's not feasible or that's not likely. I'm sure somewhere, someplace, that's probably going to happen. Because there's no... The ground troops are going to lose faith in their leadership because they're not going to be able to feed them. All right. I mean, that's one of the core things. When you join the military, they feed you, right? Everybody knows that. If they stop feeding you and giving you clean water and no place to go to the bathroom other than, you know, in the bush behind your dorm, the average trooper is going to lose faith in the chain of command. And in my report, Grid Down, Death of a Nation, the psychology and physiology of human desperation, starvation, and living in a world without rule of law in this type of scenario, I really point to the humanity aspect of this. So the military will have never seen anything like this. Best way to explain this. As society starts falling apart, the average troop's going to just be sitting there. They're not going to be getting food. They're not going to be getting water. The bases aren't set up with the septic systems, most of them, to continue to function. So you could have raw sewage backing up into the dorms, into the base housing. It's just not going to be a livable location. And those soldiers, one by one or in small groups, I imagine the perimeter fence of most military bases is going to look like Swiss cheese within a week. I think it's going to be a slow leak of individuals leaving. And again, humanity is going to kick back in. Almost every soldier has a mom or a dad or a wife or a kid or a girlfriend somewhere. When they start seeing the cities burn on the edge of the horizon, they're going to go home to check in their loved ones and take care of their loved ones and protect them. So I kind of envision it more of a slow leak, and the leak's going to get bigger and faster and eventually just cease to exist.
You know, there was an NBC show over a decade ago called Revolution, and they captured some of what you're talking about here when the grid went down. And I know it's Hollywood, but I saw some of the same things there. I saw some things I didn't think were realistic, but I thought they particularly did a good job with what you're talking about. But they got into also a Mad Max scenario. That seems like that would be pretty likely, especially in urban centers where people who aren't prepared, don't have food, water, resources, they're going to prey upon each other.
Yeah, so... This is kind of an important distinction to make. Again, I would highly recommend you can download my Grid Down, Death of a Nation report. It's 122 pages. It's on the psychology and physiology of humans as when you take away their food, their infrastructure, and put them in this type of scenario. And you can download the report for free on my website, griddownconsulting.com, in the resource tab. You can get a paperback version of it on Amazon if you want. But it's very important to understand that a lot of times, and a lot of the experts will look at, oh, it's the city people that, you know, and that's true. They have limited resources and they're packed like sardines into a very tight space and their infrastructure is not going to work. Yes, the city's going to fall apart within 2 to 3 days. And it's just going to escalate from there. Because again, this all comes down to food, right? But the country, I live very remote and the country people are the same way. Every country person I know that we all garden, they all garden, they all can, they all make fresh bread, but they still go to the store twice a week to get their supplies. They may know how to garden, but most of them go to the nursery each spring to buy their tomato plants or their pepper plants. They may have some seeds. They don't have a root cellar. They don't have, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 canning jars. They don't understand. They've never lived off of what they've grown. So this idea that, and I'm not saying you're saying this, but I hear it a lot, you know, this idea, well, you know, it's going to be really bad for the city people. It's going to be really bad for the country people too, because they don't have the life skills that prior generations had with living without electricity.
What's the number one skill they should have? Is it canning?
No, the problem with canning is it takes a lot of glass jars. You're going to spend a heck of a lot of money. So if you look at a can of green beans or peas from the grocery store, like a pint size, you're looking at 60 calories, right? So the amount of food you're going to have to store in a canning and glass jars is going to be a mountain of it. So you need to learn how our ancestors did that for millennia with root cellaring and how to store different types of vegetables, what types of vegetables to grow, right? Potatoes, artichoke, things with a very high calorie count that will last a long time in storage, right? So even if we go back to like the 1800s, the early 1800s, our forefathers that crossed the Great Divide and the Plains people, they still had a general store they went to for salt, that they went to for supplies. They had horse-drawn plows. All that stuff doesn't exist today. So the problem that you're running into is you have a very short window of time before things fall apart. And you don't have enough time, because a lot of people think, well, this is going to be like any other scenario. The brightest minds will get people together, even though the phones don't work. You have no way to get these people together. But even exactly. If you could brainstorm this situation or get people into the same location, it's such an overwhelming. We have 330 million Americans spread out across a very large landmass. The only way mass starvation does not exist in this world today is with electricity, interstate trucking, gas pumps, factory systems. I tell the story of, you know, when you go to the grocery store, there is, you let's say you buy a can of beans. You swipe that across the cash register. Instantly, a signal goes from that cash register to their store's distribution center saying, put another can of beans on the next truck. The distribution center computer then forwards another electronic signal to the canning facility. We need another can of beans on the next truck. The canning facility to the farm, so on and so forth. Our world, our food infrastructure is a bunch, is trillions, billions and trillions of electronic signals on a daily basis. If you stop that, everything stops exactly where it's at. When the grocery stores are empty, they're never getting resupplied. There's really no way to stop this without hardening the grid beforehand and having the ability to fix the electric grid quickly to prevent what you're calling Mad Max. And I would, you know, 100% agree that is what it will look like.
Interesting. Let's go through, you said 90% death rate after 1 year, goes. Let's talk about all-cause mortality beginning in the early stages. I would imagine airplanes falling from the sky if it was an EMP, stuff like that. So let's walk through the causes of death that we'll see to get to that 90% figure.
Okay. So, again, you mentioned plane crashes. That's a very small percentage. I think it's something like 20% of Americans at this point need some sort of pharmaceutical to live with. So pharmacies are going to be closed. They're going to be looted here probably within a couple of days. So those people are going to go away. Anybody that's on a ventilator, anybody that's in a hospital. So again, hospitals have 24 to 48 hours, sometimes as much as a week of backup diesel generation. The problem is they probably haven't been EMP tested. If they have been, you're relying on doctors and nurses showing up for work when the world's falling apart around them. At some point, justifiably so, they're going to go home and take care of their wife and kids, or their be with their husband. Same with police officers and firefighters. Again, no phones, no internet, no 911. If you're talking about these large cities, with especially with an EMP, it's going to take out roughly 20 to 25% of the cars that are on the road. The traffic lights are going to come down. So it's just going to gridlock traffic in a lot of these big cities. So even if the police wanted to, you know, go around and help people out, assuming their cars work, there's no kind of, how are they going to get them back? How are they going, their radios don't work. At some point within a couple of days, they're going to throw up their hands, and, you know, there's really not much they can do. The judges probably aren't showing up. The court system's not functioning. The jails aren't functioning. They're going to basically throw up their hands and go home. Again, things are going to be falling apart quickly in the city to be with their loved ones, to protect their loved ones. Firefighters, the same thing. The water pressure isn't going to be functioning, so the hydrants aren't going to be working. Not that they could get their trucks to where they needed to be to put a fire out. A lot of these old cities, like I lived for a bunch of years in Pittsburgh, you got a lot of old row houses built 150 years ago that are very flammable. I mean, and if it's in the winter, you're going to have people doing dumb things to stay warm, bringing their grill inside, or, you know, leaving their gas stove on, or that you're, if a fire breaks out in one of these old cities, you could lose entire neighborhoods because there's going to be no way to stop it. It's just going to grow and grow and grow. There's 100 factors here that basically, as the weeks progress, and the biggest death factor here is food. Again, the only way we get the American people get fed is with all these billions and trillions of electronic signals and interstate trucking. So if there's mass rioting and looting happening around the country, gas pumps don't work, what trucker is going to drive cross country to deliver goods, assuming they could even get through the traffic snarls around the cities? They're not going to drive across the country, leave their loved ones behind, not even sure if they can get home or resupply with fuel to get back. So interstate trucking shuts down. Once the grocery stores are emptied in 3 to 4 days, there's no more food showing up, not just the big cities. I'm talking about the rural grocery stores too. There's no food ever showing up at these grocery stores, and we rely on store-bought food as a nation to live. So I would envision over the course of the next 1 to 2 weeks, people are going to eat every single thing that's in their house, their cabinet. Some good examples of this, historical books on this are Red Famine. There's books on the Holodomor. You can look at what it was like in the Warsaw Ghetto. Selko Begovic is a more modern author that lived through the Armenian city that was cut off from resupply. There's tons of books on what starvation looked like. And the problem is the American people have never experienced it. If you need food in this country, you can show up to any church, any, you know, welfare office, or, you know, food kitchen, soup kitchen, something like that. You can find food. People haven't experienced going a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks without a single substantial meal. And that's the nature of my research. And that's the book that I put out there and the report that I put out there that ended up becoming a number one bestseller in experimental psychology on Amazon, was basically explaining how the American people, but it's any human. You take their food, their water, people are dying all around them. They're in desperate situations. Their ability to process information goes down very, very fast. So a lot of people, and again, the answer to this with a lot of people is, oh, me and my neighbors, you know, I'm a prepper and I've got a whole bunch of food and water and supplies in my basement, and I'm going to join forces with my cul-de-sac. We've seen hundreds of prepper fiction books written on this topic. And the problem is yes, that will work for a week, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. But one, the person that put that food and water in their basement, they plan that for their family, likely. And if they bought a long-term food package, they probably only have about 30 or 40% of the food, the calories they think they do. So they probably don't even have the 6 months that they think. They probably only have about 2 months. And now you're not just feeding your family. You've got, what, 20, 30, 40 other people on your cul-de-sac, or whatever your group looks like that you're joining forces with. you can't expect them to join up with you if you're the only one eating. You're going to have to share your food with them. You're not going to keep it secret. People are going to figure out you're the only one not getting skinny or moving their belt notches in, right? So you're going to have to share your food. All these groups are going to run out of food in very short order. And if we look at, again, Selko Begovic, The Dark Secrets of SHTF Survival, nice. I'd highly recommend everyone read that. Mm-hmm. He talks about how it broke down by, you know, family, like families, clans, and then it broke down street by street. And eventually each group got absorbed into a different group or got killed off to eventually you have a couple warlords running around and you either join them. If you want to have any hope of getting food or resources, you have to join them and check your conscience at the door and do what they tell you to do, or you're going to starve to death. And last thing, you know, I'm going for a minute, but just there's so many people through normal sleep bias that say, well, I would never do something evil. I would never do this or do that for food. And that's just not the case. History bears that out with cultures that were far more, you know, civilized, I shouldn't say civilized, but more ethically moral than our current culture is, right? You have your 6-year-old daughter is laying on a couch gray and gaunt and her face is all sucked in because you, mother or father, haven't been able to get that child a single bite of food for the last 2 weeks. What wouldn't you do to save your child? What wouldn't you do to get food? So I know this sounds like some conspiracy, you know, far-fetched science fiction TV show or something, but it's not. This is the reality. The Congressional EMP Commission has warned Congress on this topic, as have our organization and many other organizations, that if you do not harden the grid and fix this problem beforehand, that's the future this country faces. And unfortunately, our government is owned by lobbyists at the utilities. And again, we can talk more about that, but I'll just chime in here.
No, I hear what you're saying. You're right. And it's like we're looking at everything else other than what we should be looking at. What about the effect on nuclear power plants? A lot of us are concerned about potential meltdowns. And you have 120 or so nuclear power plants in North America. Will they become nuclear bombs? I mean, what's the risk?
Okay, so every single one of them is at threat of meltdown. That's a little different than blowing up. Similar to what happened in Russia. Oh, what's the name of that? The one that blew up in Russia back in the 70s.
God, I'm having a senior moment.
I'm having a brain. No, anyways, so we're looking at more of a Fukushima type of situation. When I was at the Electromagnetic Defense Task Force, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission was there, and a couple of huge oversights. At that point in time, the last event I was at, they had yet to have their backup generators EMP tested, which to me is the biggest oversight in history. I mean, if there's one set of generators we want to function after this type of event, we want the generators that run the pumps that keep the spent fuel rods and the cooling poles. We want to keep that stuff from boiling over and going Fukushima, right? So I'm not sure if they've had that done to this point, but that was a huge oversight. At that point in time, they had the average nuclear facility has 7 days of backup fuel to run those generators. Hopefully they work. If they do work, they've got 7 days of fuel. They had a civilian contract for resupply. Okay, we just talked about truckers not driving across the country with fuel trucks. It's not going to happen. Maybe they get their first resupply, but they're not getting the next, right? So I believe there's a very good chance of probably NATO stepping in because they don't want 99 nuclear facilities going to Fukushima and all that, you know, going around the northern hemisphere to their country. So I hope that NATO or somebody steps in and keeps those fuel resupply happening. I don't know. That's huge logistic situation with utter chaos in this country. So I don't know how they would make that, but hopefully they do. The other big oversight was, and this was, you know, one of the points kind of I brought up was like, what do you guys have there for food and cots? And then this was the second year they came back and said, hey, you know, we've got I think 30 days worth of food for some of our employees, because that was the big point. Is like, you've got a minimum amount of button pushers and lever pullers that you have to keep at the facility to keep it running. You're going to have a security team there alongside them to protect them. So at the first EDTF meeting, they didn't have anything there. So we convinced them. So they got some cots and some food and some ways to get water. And so that was great. But my question was, what about their immediate families, these button pushers and lever pullers and security guys? And they're like, well, you know, they would have to get top secret clearances. And that's just not a reality to bring their families. And I was like, you guys don't understand. I was like, no man, woman is going to stay at that location when they can see the fires on the edge of the horizon where they live, the town nearby, right? And mass rioting, looting a week, 2 weeks in, they're going to go home to their families and children, period. You're not going to keep them there. You have to have the ability to bring their immediate families into these locations. And they're like, well, that's just not. And I was kind of like, well, fine, don't get them security clearances, but put the food and cots there and just have them do it after the fact. I said, because they're never going to stay there. And that, again, this is what I'm saying about the military. And a lot of these government organizations, they don't have the ability to think outside the box. They only have the ability to plan through normalcy bias in the world that we're in now. That makes sense. That's sane. You can have conversations with people and the conversations make sense. Nobody's out to kill you over a can of peaches that they think you might have, right? They can't separate themselves and look at what's coming down the pike. Any general that plans a battle on a battlefield wants to know every piece of information about that battlefield. He wants to know the weather. I mean, what time of day are we going? What kind of weapons do they have? How many people do they have? What's the ground conditions like before you make any kind of plan? And so a lot of these guys are making really, and again, they're only making short-term plans that they don't have the ability to think long-term. Right. So and that's one of the reasons I wrote my report and my white paper, is to try and counteract that idea and that those kind of thought processes and say, hey, you have to take yourself out of today's planning and put yourself in a different world that you probably don't even believe can exist, but it can exist. And you have to plan for that world, not today's world.
Yeah. Trent Franks said that the bureaucrats couldn't change their modality of thinking. And he's pretty much echoing exactly what you said. And gosh, he said this, 11, 12 years ago. One of the things that I'm wondering, though, too, let's say we have a cyber attack. Certainly the long range implications aren't as serious for rebuild and repair as an EMP. But will you not have, can a cyber attack, in your estimation, take down the different grids in America at the same time and have like an EMP sort of effect that electricity is not available to the masses?
Yeah. Depends. So are we talking Russia or China, nation state actor?
Yeah, I would say so. Or Iran.
Yeah, so I would say those two countries, possibly Iran. Iran, a lot of people don't give them credit, but they've got the fourth largest cyber army in the world. North Korea, that's another area where North Korea actually spends a lot of money. So those four countries, definitely Russia and China, have the ability to take down our national electric grid. Now, the question is how much destruction can they cause through cyber? And there's a gentleman named Joe Weiss. He's talked a lot about the SCADA equipment that makes up. It's not so much the electric utilities really focus on cybersecurity at the peripheral level, right? Keeping people out of the system. But what they don't really plan for is once somebody's in the system, right? And so a lot of the supervisory control, I think it's data acquisition, like these SCADA equipment, they're basically mini computers that tell a factory or a pump to turn on or off, when to turn on or off. None of this stuff has any kind of security built into it. And so that's a very big threat across our country, both for the pipelines and for our electric grid, is not so much the computers and the laptops that the people carry around, but the equipment that runs the small computers that run the equipment. That stuff needs to be hardened as well. So my point is, can they cause how much physical destruction can they cause through cyber? We won't know that till the time comes. So yes, they can, they have the ability to take down the national electric grid, big nation state players. How long it will be out, it depends. So here's the point. Anything more than a week or two, I don't think, you know, 2-3 weeks, I don't think we come back from, because society is going to go so far down the tubes. You know, how do you go back to driving your Priuses to Starbucks for a coffee after you've, you know, killed someone in self-defense or killed somebody to get food? You know what I mean? So society, once it gets to a certain level of kind of caveman DNA comes back up into the American population, I'm just not sure how easily you pull that back, right? If you get power on in one state or in one region. So I definitely think a long-term power outage is possible. The other thing is terrorist organizations, Iran, they may just take down power for a city or a region as a warning shot, right? In fact, when this whole Ukraine situation kicked off, one of Putin's close advisors actually was on their one of their networks, one of their TV stations. I read the transcript and I saw a video on YouTube where she was basically saying that what she envisions is if our U.S. cyber warfare teams that are in Ukraine helping them, if too much, if they start doing too much stuff in Moscow or in Russia, and that's always been my stance on this, you know, with the Ukraine situation, is I'm not watching what's happening in Ukraine. I'm watching what's happening in Russia. Because if stuff starts blowing up in Russia, they're going to blame us. You know, they're going to blame Ukraine too, but they know we're in there working alongside them. Sure. And so she basically made the contention that they would black out Atlanta or Washington, D.C., and that we would block out Moscow, and then they would retaliate. And she basically said that that they have the ability to take down our grid whenever they want. So she was predicting that future as well.
Does this apply, their ability to take down the grid? Would it apply to our nuclear retaliatory facilities, the ICBMs?
Our nuclear triad is EMP hardened across this country. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have submarines that are out in the ocean as well. So I do not believe it would take down our nuclear response. But here's the thing about EMP. If you drive a cargo container or submarine into the Gulf of Mexico and you fire a missile straight up in the air, and there's no, we have no missile defenses from anything firing straight up. Our missile defenses are pointed towards the North Pole, not the South. And therefore they're to stop missiles coming over the poles, right? In the Gulf of Mexico, there's nothing going to stop this thing. If they decide to do it, it's going to happen. And they shoot that missile straight up in the air. That nuclear device, that nuclear weapon detonates 300 kilometers up in low atmosphere. And there's no way to tell what country it came from. That's the beauty. I should say the beauty of this, but that's the, again, the scary part of this is, you know, if somebody sets off a suitcase bomb or a nuclear weapon on American soil, you know, the day after, probably that day, later that day, they're going to have people in big white suits out there scooping dirt, testing it, finding exactly what country that nuclear material came from. That doesn't happen if it happens up in the atmosphere. I guess the point I'm making is nuclear deterrence. Who do you nuke, right? We can suspect, it was probably Iran. Do we just nuke them? Because we can't fight a war with them. All of our military equipment on at CONUS here is going to be fried. So what do we do? So I don't envision the powers that be behind the scenes, you know, the global community, we'll call it, will allow us to react with nuclear weapons. Because again, this, a nuclear EMP is not considered nuclear warfare by any other country. This is important to understand. Here's another key point. This is considered cyber warfare. If they detonate a nuclear bomb at 300 kilometers above the Earth's surface over our country, none of that fallout hits us. They don't kill a single person by doing that. In fact, Iran, in their war doctrine, one of their statements is it's Sharia compliant. One of their statements is the fact that they don't kill a single person in America. We kill ourselves. Our own arrogance and our, you know, dependence on electricity is what kills everybody in this country. So they consider Sharia compliant. killing, you know, 300 million Americans is Sharia compliant because it's cyber warfare, because it just affects electronics. It does not kill people directly.
Well, it's an interesting twist, isn't it? I think the thing that I really wonder about, though, is there anything that the average person can do to mitigate the dangers? And I know it's a tough question.
Yeah. I have it's not a tough question. It's a very complicated question. So here's my answer. If you have a lot of money to put some food, water, and have a fallback location in an urban area, you know, in Uncle Bob's farm, somewhere off the beaten path, your best chance of living is the least amount of human interaction you can have that first year. If you can survive through the death and destruction of the first year and have kind of the life skills needed to survive after the fact, that's your best chance of success. So having a kind of a fallback location and supplies there to live as long as possible. I realize that's the average blue collar guy out there. That's not in their realm of things that they're planning for their future. They're putting their kids in college and things like that. So I don't want you to cash in your kids' college fund based off this conversation I've had with Dave and run out and, you know, this is don't operate in fear is what I'm getting at. Be wise. My biggest recommendation is educate yourself on the threat. So again, I wrote books, Survival Theory 2 on this topic.
Let me interrupt you here. I want you to tell the audience how they can get a copy of your book.
Anywhere books are sold. I mean, you can get it at Barnes & Noble if you want. You can get it ordered through there. Amazon, okay. Kindle, you can listen to my books on Audible. They're available in basically every format. So Survival Theory 2. I've also written a fiction series, but I would definitely start with the other two books I just mentioned. You can download that report that I mentioned. Probably the first 30% of Survival Theory 2 is actually that report I did for the Electromagnetic Defense Task Force on the starvation issue. Again, it has to do with the psychology and physiology of what happens to the human brain, what happens to the human body. I look at a bunch of different studies like the Minnesota Starvation Experiment, Milgram study, Philip Zimbardo, world-renowned psychologist. He's another one that I reference in there. So, yeah.
You're talking about the prison experiment with Zimbardo?
Yeah. Well, he has a book called The Lucifer Effect also.
Yeah,
how good
true.
People
yeah.
turn evil. Because most people think that, mankind is generally good, right? Mankind is generally... it's just their life experience over the last 100 years with laws and police and their life experience in the richest country and most successful country in the world. The fact of the matter is man is depraved from birth. As a Christian, I believe that mankind is the amount of evil a human can do to another human being is almost unheard of. Again, so if you read the Lucifer Effect, his study is on how like an average farm boy from Omaha can go over to Vietnam, do horrible atrocities, and then come home and live a normal life. He did studies on the Nazis and how they could go to a concentration camp and put people into ovens. And then, you know, you find them 20 years later and they're a used car salesman, right? They've got a family and kids, right? How can horrible, horrible things happen? So it's a fascinating book. Again, Lucifer Effect, right. How good people turn evil.
Yeah, I'm a former psychology professor, so I'm very familiar. You talked about Milgram, and we get into groupthink and all those issues there. It's mm-hmm. just, I hear what you're saying. We're just about out of time, but I want to ask, and I have to have a brief answer on this, and it's probably not a brief answer as appropriate, but we have open border. Does your work concern the possibility of terrorists coming in who are trained to take down the grid manually?
So that would get into the physical attack against the electric grid.
Yes.
We definitely do look at that. We were just looking at a report on special interest alien apprehensions at the border. We know that just in the last 2 years, yeah. we had over 1,600 Pakistanis that were captured at the border. There are hundreds of Libyans and I think 6,000 or 7,000 Afghanis were captured across. These are the ones we caught. If you know anything about the southern border right now, there's a whole lot we're not catching, right? So, I mean, if we caught 1,600 Pakistanis the last 2 years crossing the border. How many are actually here, right? And well, so I'm not saying every single person from Pakistan or from Afghanistan or Lebanon where Hamas is or any of these countries, I'm not saying every single person is evil. A lot of them are coming here to work. But even if it's a small percentage of them that were sent here, and if we see, if our eyes tell us the truth, a lot of them are military-aged men, right? Yes. And I think there's as much as 100,000 Chinese that came across the border here in the last couple of years.
And some of them have PLA tattoos. I mean, I've been told that by Border Patrol.
Absolutely.
They're interdicting Chinese soldiers, yes.
The idea that we don't, because of our border security and our porous border on the southern end there, the idea that we don't have sleeper cells from many countries in this country right now waiting to be activated, I mean, I think you'd have to be extremely naive not to understand that fact.
And the causation either comes from just unbelievable stupidity or intent. And we'll leave that to the audience to decide what will on that issue. Well, Jonathan, it's been a pleasure having you on. First time visitor here to the Common Sense Show. Certainly, I hope it's not your last, because there's a lot we left on the table, and I look forward to having you back to discuss that.
Happy to come on anytime, Dave. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jonathan. Take care.